This morning's docket number 88946, Lenar Swaling. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning. Good morning, Justices. Aaron Levis of Neumeyer Dillion on behalf of the appellants.
And, Your Honors, I'll reserve 5 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you. And for convenience sake this morning, Your Honors, as we did in the briefing, I'll refer to the appellants collectively as Lenar. Mm-hmm. So, Your Honors, this is an appeal from the district court's denial of our motion to compel arbitration. And as the court is aware, the district court denied that motion on two grounds. One, that Lenar brought its motion to compel too late as compared to when the statute of limitations would have run had Ms. Whalen not filed her complaint before the statute of limitations had run, in comparison to the language regarding the statute of limitations in the dispute resolution provision of the purchase and sale agreement. And the second ground was that the arbitration provision was simply unenforceable because Ms. Whalen's negligence claim for her personal injuries had nothing to do with the Fern Ridge property or the purchase transaction, and therefore that Ms. Whalen's claims were outside of the scope of the purchase agreement.
So with respect to the first issue,
yes,
the clause in the Lenar drafted that clause, right?
Correct.
And it seems pretty clear that an arbitration action, how do we get around the clear language of what it says?
Well, I think both sides are characterizing this language as clear, and I think both sides have a bona fide belief that it is, but a different belief. I would submit to this court, as we did below, that the respondent is reading the clause, in no event shall the dispute be submitted for arbitration after the date when institution of a legal or equitable proceeding based on the underlying claims in such dispute would be barred by the applicable statute of limitations. I think both respondent and the district court read that without acknowledging the context it has to the first portion of that last sentence of section 17.1. which states that nothing herein shall extend the time period by which a claim or cause of action may be asserted under the applicable statute of limitations. And so I would submit to the court, as I did to the district court, that the purpose of this...
But what does in no event mean?
Under no circumstances.
Right.
Right.
So... under no circumstances shall the dispute be submitted for arbitration after the statute of limitations lapses, right? And Lenar had 9 months. I mean, this isn't, I know that the example in the briefing is like it could have, you know, if you read it the way it's written, that the lawsuit could be filed on the day the statute of limitations runs, making it very difficult for Lenar to exercise their right to arbitrate, but here there was plenty of time, right?
There was certainly longer than that one day that we used in the example, a period of months, as Your Honor described. But we believe the intent here is that nothing in this arbitration clause should make it possible for a plaintiff to allow the statute of limitations to expire and then initiate an arbitration for a claim under this arbitration provision.
Right, but Lenar wrote this and you didn't say this applies only to the to a plaintiff.
That's correct.
It says in no event.
It does say in no event.
Okay.
I agree with Your Honor on the words on the page.
But also, counsel, just the concept that they can't wait until after to game it. Your own clause says any dispute shall be submitted for binding arbitration within a reasonable time after such dispute has risen. Lennar participated in demanded a jury trial, answered extensive discovery, experts, Rule 35, and almost 2 years later, invoked the arbitration clause. Is that a reasonable amount of time? Should we consider that a waiver in any event?
Well, Your Honor, I'll answer that question in two ways. One, directly, no, it should not be considered a waiver. But before I explain that a bit, to step back, the district court did not, although the issue was argued, the district court made no findings of fact and made no determination as to whether there was a waiver or not. And so that issue really isn't before this court on this appeal. But with respect to was there a waiver, all of the case law suggests that in order to waive the intention to arbitrate, there needs to be three elements. One, knowledge of the arbitration clause, which of course we had. Two, actions that are inconsistent with the intention to arbitrate. And three, prejudice to the opposing party. So are the actions inconsistent? Well, in all of the case law that defines that the actions were inconsistent, all of the litigants in that case engaged in activity that went to the merits of the claim. There were motions for summary judgment. There were motions to dismiss.
How about the Rule 35 exams? Would you be able to get those in arbitration?
Your Honor, I would submit that'd be up to the arbitrator. That would be up for leave of the arbitrator.
Have you gotten Rule 35 exams in arbitration?
I have, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you get three?
If I believe that if the arbitrator was persuaded that they were necessary, that the arbitrator would grant that. Just like, if I may use another example, often under different rules of private arbitration organizations, interrogatories may not be allowed, but we have in prior cases used interrogatories with the consent of an arbitrator in that particular case. Your Honor made an example of extensive discovery being answered. Production of documents is required in any arbitration, and so that would have been the same. The activity with respect to being contrary with an intention to arbitrate in the cases that found that all go to the merits of the claim. The third element being prejudice to the opposing party. We've submitted that there is no prejudice to Ms. Whalen in this case because, one, she engaged in the same scope of discovery that Lennar did, and two, there's nothing in the record to indicate that the Rule 35 exams would not have been allowed by an arbitrator if this were an arbitration. And three, there is nothing to suggest that any of the discovery that's been done by either party would not be allowed to be used in an arbitration if this matter were to proceed in arbitration. And lastly, there would not be a duplication of efforts because none of that discovery would have to be done again in arbitration, and no depositions have been taken, so the depositions would proceed exclusively in arbitration. And frankly, there's been no efforts by either party as far as seeking a judicial determination on the merits of the claims, such as were given as examples in the case law that's been cited in the briefs.
Why does Lennar... go ahead.
If arbitration is so important to Lennar, why would Lennar wait 2 years to initiate arbitration?
Well, Your Honor, I think what we're seeing is just kind of a logistical fact of civil litigation here. Certainly, a client says, hey, we've been sued. Their counsel files an answer, and then, as is required, we collect some documents. The plaintiff in this case was not the original signatory to the purchase and sale agreement. And so through investigating the claims and gathering the documents, it eventually became clear that there was an arbitration clause that governed the situation.
Isn't an arbitration clause in every single one of your contracts?
That is correct, Your Honor. But the portion of the purchase and sale agreement signed by the husband prior to the amendment being signed by the plaintiff was not put together until down the road a bit after the case had been commenced.
Same contract, though.
Acknowledged, Your Honor.
Right, because it rather appears that Lennar used the court process to get discovery that was more easily got in the court, and then a couple weeks after the Rule 35 exam, then asked to arbitrate the case. I mean, it just looks like Lennar is trying to have its cake and eat it too.
I take your point, Your Honor. However, again, I would just go to not having sought any judicial determination of the merits of the claim. Thank you. I'll reserve, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning. Richard Eagleman on behalf of Respondent Whalen. May it please the court, counsel. As the court has addressed, we have actually four issues up on appeal. Two were in the district court orders. The third one you've addressed is the waiver issue. And the fourth issue is the first issue they brought up on appeal, was an arbitrator should decide whether this case is subject to arbitration. In regards to the first issue, in reading the arbitration clause, there's really three parts to it. One, that the claim has to be brought timely, within a reasonable time, which Plaintiff Whalen did. She filed 9 months before the statute of limitation. The second issue is it has to be brought before the statute of limitation, which she did. The third issue, it says that it must be submitted for arbitration before the statute of limitations. Doesn't mean that it has to be arbitrated before the statute of limitations. It needs to be submitted into the arbitration program. In fact, the contract says it needs to go to mediation first, but the arbitration says the provision says the same thing. As the court pointed out,
how do you respond to Lennar's argument that this clause really means that an action needs to be of some sort, needs to be initiated before the statute of limitations? And since Ms. Whalen filed her lawsuit, then that clause essentially just no longer applies.
Well, I think you need to read the contract as whole, because you need to take the plain reading of the contract. It's pretty clear and unambiguous that there's three parts to this contract. The action does have to be submitted before the statute of limitation is expired, and it has to be submitted. Now, in their example, if they said that Plaintiff Whalen filed the day before the statute of limitation, they could go back and use a waiver argument that they didn't timely submit this or within a reasonable time, and Plaintiff Whalen had waived her right to argue the arbitration clause would not apply. I think waiver could work both ways for both the plaintiff and the defendant on that issue. So as far as the plain reading of the statute, it says submitted. They did not seek to submit this until 13 months after the statute expired, I believe. It was 17 months into the litigation that we've been using the courts to litigate this case.
What is the prejudice to Ms. Whalen?
The main prejudice is that we've been in litigation for 17 months. An arbitration is supposed to be expeditious and cost-effective. Having three Rule 35 examinations, having to hire all these expert witnesses to go through discovery, it's prejudice to her that she has to wait 17 months before they decide to file a right to arbitrate. We've had a jury trial set that was continued at the request of Lennar. It was reset, and now we have to go and get an arbitrator and basically redo everything over again, reset an arbitration program. So there's prejudice to Ms. Whalen because she had to wait 17 months before they decided to invoke an arbitration clause in their contract, which they knew about. And that's one of the elements. They knew they had that arbitration clause. So the prejudice is the 17 months, three Rule 35 examinations, and that's really the biggest prejudice on her part. In regards to the third issue still, talking about the waiver, counsel said there was no findings by the district court regarding waiver. We did brief this in the district court. The district court didn't rule on it, but this court in Nevada Gold versus AM Heritage that says, while waiver is generally a question of fact, waiver may be determined as a matter of law when the issues rest upon the legal implications of uncontested facts. The facts in this case are uncontested. We have the clear timeline of the events that took place in this matter. And also, too, acting inconsistently with the arbitration clause, they filed a demand for a jury trial. When I was rereading this contract, if you look at Section 18 of the contract, which is Joint Exhibit 52, it says that if it does go to a trial, it has to be done in front of a judge, not a jury. So they've acted inconsistently with paragraph 18 of their contract demanding a jury trial. And regarding the cases cited, the Fifth Circuit discussed 17 months after the complaint was filed, extensive discovery, and the time frame of being, why did you wait so long? So that's the biggest issue in this case for Ms. Whalen, is the time now from filing the complaint and then moving for binding arbitration, which, granted, most of the stuff was already done, but we kind of have to restart again with an early case conference. We have to get a trial date, or maybe an arbitration date. We have to pick an arbitration panel. I forget whether it was supposed to be a single arbitrator or a panel of three. And also, too, talking about within the scope of the arbitration agreement, the arbitration agreement talks about AA's construction industry mediation and AA home construction's arbitration rules in effect. Not whether this is just a general arbitration. They're talking about construction regulations for this arbitration agreement. This is a personal injury claim that had no connection with the residence they purchased. So there's another issue that they did not, this arbitration agreement, this incident would not fall within the scope of the arbitration agreement for injury.
Well, but the injury happened within the community, right?
It happened on the property, but community is not defined in the contract. Could it happen on any Lennar community, and then it's subject to binding arbitration?
Well, but, I mean, we don't really have to answer that question, right, because it happened in the community where her home was.
Correct, but it was unrelated to the property. And so this may be too broad, even though we didn't brief this in the district court, we didn't brief it on appeal. So I'll submit to that, but this could be too broad to be interpreted to, if anything happens on your property, is subject to arbitration. But yes, it did happen within the community. But we still have to go back to the waiver argument. Even if you do find it's within the scope, we still have the waiver argument, we still have the statute argument.
So what standards should we use to determine whether there's a waiver?
Well, the standard to use for the waiver is set forth in Nevada Gold Casino, Golden Casinos, that they knew the right to arbitrate, they acted inconsistently with that right, and there's prejudice to the party, Plaintiff Whalen. Clearly, they knew of the right to arbitrate. It's in their contract. It's essentially a contract of adhesion. The buyer has no negotiation on that part. So they knew of that, so that submits element one. They acted inconsistently because, one, they demanded a jury trial, which is inconsistent. They actively litigated this case for 17 months. They've got three Rule 35 examinations.
So what about their argument that, and there's some case law that tends to support this, that there needs to be a dispositive motion filed with the court in order to act inconsistently with the right to arbitrate?
I read those cases, and yes, those cases did involve some dispositive motions, but if I remember correctly, the courts didn't really state that that was one of the defining factors. It was just part of the analysis, I'm trying to think of the word to use, but the totality of the circumstances is that, look, you waited 17 months, one court said 12 months, another one was 17 months, one was 2 years, and they allowed for the discovery process in the courts. Because if we go back to Nevada statute regarding arbitrations, arbitrations are supposed to be timely and cost-effective. 17 months of litigation is not timely and cost-effective.
And you're telling us that our standard of review is de novo because the facts aren't contested and it's an issue of law.
Correct. And it does, the case law out there, I believe the standard of review for this issue is de novo for this court. So that's a de novo review for this court to decide. Going to the fourth issue that they discussed up on appeal, it's up for an arbitrator to decide whether this case is subject to arbitration. The case that they referenced actually, it's the U.S. Supreme Court case. It said the question whether the parties have submitted a particular dispute to arbitration is for judicial determinations unless the parties clearly and unmistakably provide otherwise. And that was AT&T Technologies versus Communications, 1986 decision. The contract doesn't state that any issues of whether the claim is subject to arbitration is subject for an arbitrator to decide. So I think they lose on that argument.
Didn't the contract reserve arbitrability to the arbitrator? So to the extent that Judge Jones ruled that it happening in the community as opposed to her personal property was not within the scope, wasn't that a decision by contract that should have been left to the arbitrator?
I think they waived that issue because they didn't bring that up. They submitted this case to the district court. They did.
If we got past that, just on the issue of whether the arbitration clause expired, not whether it was timely invoked or all that.
Everything's
just
fine.
Forget about that. Let's get to there. The decision of whether it applies by contract, the arbitrability is left to the arbitrator per the contract.
You can say that better than I can.
I don't know about that, but you think?
Well, I have looked at the contract and my interpretation of the contract, which may be different than the court's interpretation of the contract, it is not specifically reserved for an arbitrator. Because if you take in the whole paragraph 18 of the contract, which is at the joint exhibit 52, that says, notwithstanding the party's obligation to submit any dispute to mediation and arbitration in the event of a particular dispute is not subject to mediation or arbitration, then the parties agree to the following district court, court of competent jurisdiction. So if you're raising the issue of subject matter jurisdiction in this case, yes, subject matter jurisdiction can be raised at any time. I've actually argued that before the Supreme Court and won on that issue, but they have submitted subject matter jurisdiction to the district court to allow the district court to decide, because they asked the district court to decide this issue, that this matter should be going to arbitration, and the district court made the determination it was not. So that was submitted to the district court. They waived any type of jurisdictional argument on that. Is there any other questions for the court?
No.
Okay. Thank you for your time. We respectfully request that you uphold the district court's decision and send this back down so we can hold the trial on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll just quickly address Your Honor's arbitrability question that you posed to my colleague here. And yes, indeed, that issue is reserved in the contract under Section 17.1 sub 4, that issues of formation, validity, or enforceability of this section are one of the disputes, as that is defined, subject to arbitration. And so had the district court granted the motion to compel, she would have compelled arbitration of all arbitrable disputes, at which point counsel may have made an argument to the arbitrator that this claim is not arbitrable or arbitratable, at which point the arbitrator would have made a decision under 17.1 sub 4 as to whether or not the claim is subject to the dispute. So I submit that's the mechanics of how that would work. With respect to the district court's determination that Ms. Whalen's claim is not within the scope of the arbitration agreement or the purchase and sale agreement, that is erroneous, and that is one of the items of contract interpretation to which this court needs to apply its de novo review. It clearly is within the scope. This claim is clearly within the scope of the arbitration provision and the purchase and sale agreement because it is specifically and explicitly defined as one of the disputes that falls within the dispute resolution provision.
So I think Ms. Whalen's concern is that community is not defined. Not that it was an injury, but it happened off of, and I think everybody agrees on that, it wasn't at her home or on her property surrounding her home. It was somewhere else in the subdivision that she was injured.
Well, I'll address that, Your Honor. So the community with a capital C is defined in the purchase and sale agreement as the portion of the community with a small c called the symphony. There is a declaration from a Lennar representative that's part of the joint appendix and was presented to the district court that identified the address in front of which Ms. Whalen tripped and fell as part of the symphony community as well. In Ms. Whalen's briefing, they refer to the community as Heritage, but concede that the trip and fall happened within the community. There's never been a an assertion by Ms. Whalen that the fall did not happen within the community. There's never been an assertion that she did not execute and bind herself to the purchase and sale agreement through execution of the amendment. There's never been an assertion by her that it's unconscionable. There's never been an assertion that...
So I'm clear. Heritage is the larger development, and Symphony is the particular subdivision Ms. Whalen's home was in.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. Okay. Yes. And I would add that the declaration from the Lennar representative at the time it was presented in the district court was unrefuted. And so the event, the injury or the claim of injury falls within all of the prongs of the definition of dispute of Section 17.1. So it definitely is within the scope. And the case law that suggests that matters outside of the scope should not be subject to arbitration provisions are matters that are not mentioned specifically within those arbitration contracts that are involved in those cases.
Okay, any other questions?
Just briefly, counsel, because they're referenced in the contract, the AAA construction mediation rules that were in effect at the time, is it your position that those allowed for Rule 35, all the procedures that you handled in the trial discovery process, were those all permitted under AAA construction mediation rules then in effect?
They're not explicitly mentioned at all, Your Honor. What is explicitly mentioned is an obligation for both sides to produce documents, and then for any additional, depositions of parties are specifically mentioned, and then any other discovery that the arbitrator feels is necessary due to the circumstances of the case is left to the arbitrator's discretion. And so in this particular instance, I would submit to the court that we would suggest to the arbitrator that these Rule 35 exams were necessary and that they would be permitted.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, counsel, thank you for your argument.